Let's go ahead and grab those Bibles and do what we do, and that's study the Word of God verse by verse. We're in Numbers chapter 18, verse 15, as we start today. We're looking at some of the things that God told Aaron as part of his exclusive right to the high priesthood. God chose, for his own reasons, to make Aaron's family the line that would act as the high priest for all of Jewish history. And because of that, God makes sure that this family is supported out of the offerings, out of the tithe, so that they don't have to go and have some other job in order to function as the priests. So we've already talked about the tithe. Now let's talk about some of the offerings that are given in the process of the worship that takes place in the tabernacle. Numbers 18:15. Everything that opens the womb of all flesh, whether man or beast, which they offer to he who is, shall be yours. So all firstborn animals automatically belong to the priesthood. And what they do with it is their choice. If it's a sacrificial animal, it's going to be sacrificed. But if it's a work animal, it's probably going to be either used by the priesthood or sold in order to have the value on hand for the priest to use for other things. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man you shall redeem, and the firstborn of unclean animals you shall redeem. So firstborn people are automatically redeemed by cash, and the same is true for non-sacrificial animals. Their redemption price, at a month old you shall redeem them, you shall fix at 5 shekels in silver according to the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. And I've told you I function on this standard that a shekel throughout the history of Israel is roughly about 2 days' wages. And so 5 shekels here is 10 days' wages out of a 300-day work year. So it's a fairly significant amount that would need to be used to redeem. Verse 17, but the firstborn of a cow, or the firstborn of a sheep, or the firstborn of a goat, you shall not redeem. They are holy. You shall sprinkle their blood on the altar and shall burn their fat as a food offering with a pleasing aroma to he who is. So sacrificial grade animals are sacrificed. But in a lot of the cases, in fact, I'd say probably in the majority of cases, the sacrifice involves a representative portion of the animal being burnt up, and then the balance of it is divided up between the worshiper and the priests. And so we start reading some of that here. But their flesh shall be yours, as the breast that is waved and as the right thigh are yours. So in most of these ceremonies where some of the animal is going to be eaten, then the front breast area belongs to the priest that's doing the officiating, and so does the right thigh area. All the holy contributions that the people of Israel present to he who is, I give to you, and to your sons and daughters with you, as a perpetual due. It is a covenant of salt forever before he who is, for you and for your offspring with you. Covenant of salt just means it's very binding, because salt was a valuable commodity. In our English language, salary comes from the word salt. So that tells you we've still got a remnant of this understanding that salt is important. Verse 20, he who is said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in the land, neither shall you have any portion among you, among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the people of Israel. This gets back to the land that we talked about already too. Each of the tribes will have a designated region of the promised land given to them. but there will not be a Levitical region. Instead, the Levites will be divided up into different cities around all the different tribal regions. And the priests will be in a similar situation, kind of divided up, so that when they're not actively offering sacrifices at the tabernacle, they will be functioning as God's representatives in the different tribal areas, talking about what the law says and how these tribal areas should keep up their commitment to God. That was the original plan. And as such, they still have a right to the food that's given through the tithes and offerings. Verse 21, to the Levites I have given every tithe in Israel for an inheritance in return for their service that they do, their service in the tent of meeting, so that the people of Israel do not come near the tent of meeting, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall do the service of the tent of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity, meaning they're basically functioning as the representatives for the rest of the tribes. We've talked about this as well. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and among the people of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithe of the people of Israel, which they present as a contribution to He Who Is, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. Therefore I have said of them that they shall have no inheritance among the people of Israel. So they've got towns, they've got Levitical towns, and they've got a little bit of land around those towns that they can work, but they are paid in agricultural products and animal products that are given as a tithe to God. And so God just passes that on to them. Verse 25, and He Who Is spoke to Moses, saying, moreover, you shall speak and say to the Levites, when you take from the people of Israel the tithe that I have given you from them as an inheritance, then you shall present a contribution from it to He Who Is, a tithe of a tithe. And so this is where we find out the organization of how God takes care of the different groups. The tribal people, they keep 90% of what they produce every year for their own use, for their own maintenance through the year and storing up for the sabbatical and jubilee years that come on a regular basis. The tenth that they give to God's worship and service every year, the first fruits, the firstborn animals, all of that goes to the Levites so that they can live off of it. And they take 1/10 and give to the priests. So effectively, the tribe of Levi, each individual family, is living off 90% of the tithe that they received, because they pass on 10% to the priests to live off of. And so the priests, I have zero doubt, will probably give 10% of what they receive back to the Lord in the form of sacrifices. That is the completion of the cycle. Everyone is giving a small portion back to show their thankfulness of the 90% that they are keeping and using as a blessing from God. And I honestly believe that the church should be functioning in a very similar fashion. Everybody should be giving, in my opinion now, about 10% of what they receive as blessings from God. They get to keep 90% of that for their own enjoyment and for their own life and even for their own savings. But 90% of it needs to go to the church, and then the church is going to be using that not just simply to take care of the worship and the public fellowship things like the building, but part of that is going to be going to people such as myself that are giving themselves full time to the Lord's work. And then guess what? We are giving 10% back to the service of the church as well. Because everybody needs to acknowledge that God is blessing them. And so I hope you are involved in tithing to the Lord. If you haven't in the past, I would encourage you to try it. Think of the book of Malachi. Try me, the Lord says, and see whether or not I open up the floodgates of heaven and bless you with even more. So do what you can to support your local congregation and the work of the Lord that goes on there. All right, back to the text, verse 27. Your contribution shall be counted to you as though it were the grain of the threshing floor and as the fullness of the winepress. So it's as if you went out there and did the work in the field and brought in the harvest, because the people who actually did that stuff is just handing it over to you so that you've got something to live off of. Verse 28, so you shall also present a contribution to he who is from your tithes, which you receive from the people of Israel, and from it you shall give the Lord's contribution, or he who is his contribution, to Aaron the priest. Out of all the gifts to you, you shall present every contribution due to he who is from each its part, or Beth's part, is to be dedicated. And let me say a little something on that. In the book of Malachi, God complains, and rightfully so, that some of the immature and perhaps even wicked Israelis of that time period were giving to God junk, giving the almost dead animals, giving the almost rotten food, or giving the stuff that they begrudgingly could part with. And God says, how dare you treat the giving to the God of the universe in such a fashion? In the church, I have sometimes seen people donate to the work of the Lord cast off stuff, junk. I have seen people begrudgingly give what small amount they think they can afford out of their wallets and their purses. Now, I've not intended to see this. I've not tried to spy on this. I've just noticed it as I've been involved in my life and ministry. And that's not good. As Paul says in the New Testament, God loves a cheerful giver. And each of us should give as we've determined ahead of time in our hearts, not out of this you have to attitude, but out of a I want to attitude. I am thankful that God has blessed me, and I want to bless God's work. And so, brothers and sisters, I want to encourage you now to revisit your own mindset on this sort of thing. And thank God for the way that he takes care of you by giving generously into the work of the local body of believers that you're part of. These churches cannot survive without your gracious assistance. That's the way God designed it. Each church has to take care of its own business. The pandemic that we're in the midst of right now has really hit congregations hard because of this situation that many people only give when they're in the building and they give spontaneously out of whatever they happen to have in their wallet or in their purse. And that is not good. The church's work goes on, even in the midst of our procedures that we're doing right now of distance worship and fellowship and learning. And that offering is needed. So pray about it and do something as God would direct you. All right, back to the text. Verse 30, therefore you shall say to them, when you have offered from it the best of it, then the rest shall be counted to the Levites as produce of the threshing floor and produce of the wine press. And you may eat it in any place, you and your households, for it is your reward in return for your service in the tent of meeting. So the tithe belonged to the Levites, the 90%, after they'd given their tithe to the priests, that was theirs. It was theirs to do with as they saw fit, including they could take it on a picnic or they could travel with it somewhere else. They could eat it anywhere because it was their pay. Verse 32, and you shall bear no sin by reason of it. Even though it was an offering to God's work, it now belongs to them, right? So you shall bear no sin by reason of it when you have contributed the best of it, but you shall not profane the holy things of the people of Israel, lest you die. So don't mistreat the tithe that you're supposed to be giving to the Lord. Don't cheat God. In the book of Malachi, again, the question is asked, will you hold out on God? And the answer that should have come up in the hearts and the minds of those reading that book was, no, I am not going to hold back on God. God has blessed me, and I need to generously give back into that work. Chapter number 19. This is the chapter that deals with the red heifer. And this becomes an interesting discussion point amongst those that are kind of into eschatology studies, that is, the study of last things. Because so many of the people that are wrapped up in that, they are convinced that a new temple needs to be built and the Israeli people need to get back into doing things like the Old Testament. I don't happen to believe any of that. I believe that God is going to accomplish what he will do in the book of Revelation regardless of whether or not there is a temple. And I actually think that a temple would be an insult to the memory of Jesus Christ, who is the ultimate sacrifice. And all of those sacrifices that were part of the temple system are no longer needed. They pointed to Jesus. Once Jesus arrives, that's where our attention should all be. But irregardless of that, I know there's a bunch of people that believe that Israel has to be in the land and build a new temple and start animal sacrifices in order for the final events to take place. And because of that, they teach all the time there has to be a red heifer that can be used in this ceremony that will make the temple and its sacrifices holy. Because without these ashes of red heifer, you can't have cleanliness by biblical standards, Old Testament standards. And so they're constantly on this watch for the perfect red heifer. Now, the problem that they always point out is that the rabbis have a much higher standard about these red heifers than what we're about to read. And so if they find even one little tiny non-red hair on the heifer before it reaches its third birthday, they say, well, we can't use that one. It's not a proper red heifer. And so the news out of these groups is often like, oh, they found a new red heifer. And then later it's like, well, it turned out there was a white hair in its tail, so it can't be the red heifer. So we're still on standby. All right, so I'm much aware of all that background. And some of you, I think, are aware as well. But let's read what it actually says in the text. Numbers chapter 19. Now, he who is spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, this is the statute of the law that he who is has commanded. Tell the people of Israel to bring you a red heifer without defect, in which there is no blemish and on which a yoke has never come. Now, what does it mean by those terms? I believe the rabbis, since the time of the destruction of the Second Temple, have gone overboard on this. And they believe that what it means here is that it has to be red on every single hair. But what we've actually seen in the application of this everywhere else is it just has to be a completely healthy animal without any clear problems on it, like cuts and scratches and some sort of ulcer or something of that nature. That's what's meant here. Not that it has to be an absolute only red in every hair heifer. Now, this thing has to have never had a yoke put on it. So it's never been used as a draft animal. Verse 3, and you shall give it to Eleazar the priest, and it shall be taken outside the camp and slaughtered before him. So this animal, this female cow, is presented to the priest, and once he evaluates that it is of proper sacrificial standard, he takes it outside the encampment of Israel, and he butchers it out. Verse 4, Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood with his finger and sprinkle some of its blood toward the front of the tent of meeting 7 times. That's symbolic of completion. The heifer shall be burned in his sight, its skin, its flesh, and its blood with its dung shall be burned. So it's burned up completely. We've seen other animals that this is done with. The priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet yarn and throw them into the fire, burning with the heifer. And these are used in other ceremonies for cleansing. So they're thrown into the fire as well. Then the priest shall wash his clothes and bathe his body in water. Afterward, he may come into the camp, but the priest shall be unclean until evening. The one who burns the red heifer shall wash his clothes in water and bathe his body in water and shall be unclean until evening. And a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and deposit them outside the camp in a clean place, and they shall be kept for the water of impurity for the congregation of the people of Israel. It is a sin offering. And the one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. And this shall be a perpetual statute for the people of Israel and for the strangers who sojourns among them. So everyone involved in the process has to go through a ritual cleansing. And the ashes are kept in a safe location to be used as an additive to water, which then becomes a cleansing water in the following ceremonies and other ceremonies that we've talked about. And so there's got to be a lot of red heifers burned through the history of Israel for this to be properly used. Now, the modern day rabbis will tell you only a limited number of red heifers have ever been burned. I disagree with their number. I think that they have made those numbers up, honestly, and that there have been a lot more red heifers burned in the way that we've just said, because a lot of cleansing has gone on in the time of Israel's history. And this is how it's used. Verse 11, whoever touches the dead body of any person shall be unclean 7 days. He shall cleanse himself with the water, that's the water of this cleanliness, on the 3rd day, and on the 7th day shall be clean. If he does not cleanse himself on the 3rd day and on the 7th day, he will not be clean. So we've got people who've been involved in the funeral business or funeral services. They have to go through a cleansing ceremony with this water. Whoever touches a dead person, the body of anyone who has died, and does not cleanse himself, defiles the tabernacle of he who is. And that person shall be cut off from Israel because the water for impurity was not thrown on him. He shall be unclean. His uncleanness is on him. This is the law when someone dies in a tent. Everyone who comes into the tent and everyone who is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. Every open vessel that's not covered, fastened on it, is unclean. Whoever in the field touches someone who is killed with a sword or who died naturally or touches a human bone or a grave shall be unclean 7 days. For the unclean, they shall take some ashes of the burnt sin offering, and fresh water shall be added into a vessel. And then a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water, sprinkle it on the tent and on the furnishings and the persons who were on it, who were there, and whoever touched the bone or the slain or the dead of the grave. And the clean person shall sprinkle it on the unclean on the 3rd day and the 7th day, and thus on the 7th day he shall cleanse him, and he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in the water, and at evening he shall be clean. If a man who is unclean does not cleanse himself, that person shall be cut off from the midst of the assembly, since he has defiled the sanctuary of he who is, because the water for impurity has not been thrown on him. He's unclean. And it shall be for a statute forever for them. The one who sprinkles the water for impurity shall wash his clothes, and the one who touches the water for impurity shall be unclean until evening, and whatever the unclean person touches shall be unclean, and anyone who touches it shall be unclean until evening. So you can see that with all the different wars and the battle cleanups and the natural deaths and animal attacks and all of that, there had to be a ton of water being used from this ashes of the red heifer. Well, we're out of time. Have a wonderful weekend serving the Lord, and I'll see you next week.